We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. With me, as always, my guy, Jack Manuel. And Jack, we have a lot of good things to talk about tonight. The Nets won their home opener for, I think, the first time in 7 years. They won 125-99 over the Golden State Warriors, up by 38 at one point in this game, and always really in control since the first quarter. How are you feeling, Jack, after a performance like that?
Outscored in the final quarter, Nick. Not good enough.
We got to see Reggie Perry. I mean, it's funny enough, is like we've been talking about Reggie Perry a lot, but it's like when he initially was drafted, I'm not sure we would have even saw him play any NBA minutes. He's already logged minutes in this first game of the season. And you saw Rodion's out there. You saw TLC. You saw Tyler Johnson. Really got to like that back of the end bench unit because the Nets were up so comfortably in this game. But before we get into it, quick reminder, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including otgbasketball.com, netsrepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But Jack, where do we start with this one? 125-99, just dominance across the board.
It really was, Nick. I want to ask you the big question, probably what a lot of listeners are here for. Who played better, Durant or Irving?
Oh, man. I think Kyrie was better offensively, but KD's two-way impact was definitely felt in this game. You know, the length was just on display. You had three steals, one block, contested a ton of shots, and even a couple of the foul calls I felt like could have been 50-50 the other way for clean blocks. So really happy with the way they both played. And Kyrie just, you know, kind of set the tone offensively in that first half and just being so dominant. And KD did it with a little bit of everything. Like, their fingerprints were all over the game.
Look, they I said it, and it was a bit hot takey at the time that they could be the best superstar duo in the league. They certainly played like it tonight. There is absolutely no doubt about it that Kevin Durant played like one of the best players in the league, and Kyrie played like a top 10 All NBA caliber player in that respect as well. I echo the sentiments. You know, I thought Kevin Durant looked locked in. His conditioning is only going to continue to improve. You know, there was, I think the offense, it's almost weird because like his defense almost looks better than his offense in weird ways because he's moving laterally as well as he is. He's showing defensive IQ. He's taking charges still. I don't like it because it still scares me a bit.
What about that goaltend that he had? He looked explosive. Like, that's as explosive as you'll ever see Kevin Durant in general. It's not like we're talking about a guy that was, like, you know, the craziest athlete. He was just given, he was 6'11", a good athlete for the NBA, and he looked good right there. And, I mean, he just mistimed it. But I think you're right, Jack. I think defensively it's a little bit easier because you don't necessarily need rhythm. You're just kind of reading the game. You know what I mean? And he's such a smart basketball player where you can tell when he's in sync. Like, when he started the game in sync on some of those jumpers early on, that was just beautiful basketball. Like, you can't really design things better than that. Some of those pull-up jumpers.
Dude, it was insane. I think we'll dive deep into them. We'll keep going with them. But, you know, 8 of 11 from the field to start the game with KD and Kyrie, 20 points. It was just like, are these guys going to miss? I was just like, when they were missing, I'm like, oh, come on, guys. You got to hit that 35-footer or whatever. And Kyrie freaking hit a half-court shot as well. It's like, this is insane.
What were you most impressed with for, like, the start of the game in terms of, like, the first half? Obviously, we knew the offense was going to be there. We knew Kyrie and KD would probably cook. But what other things kind of stuck out to you when you were like, oh, wow, okay, this is a plus that maybe I didn't anticipate or I wasn't sure it was going to be there?
I just thought the on-court rhythm was just there in so many different facets. You know, defensively, I just loved how everyone was just swarming and switching and doubling, you know, getting Kyrie, Stephen Curry uncomfortable. You know, we mentioned with Nolan on the last pod that, you know, he was the biggest worry heading into this game. 7 of 21 from the field, 2 of 10 from 3. You know, they just made him uncomfortable. They were throwing different bodies at him. They were doubling him at the top of the perimeter. I thought the defense was awesome and they was just active and engaged. And, you know, when Joe wasn't taking shots, KD was getting on him. Shoot it! Shoot it, man! I just loved all that sort of stuff, and it just seemed to me that there was just a unison and a synergy that was just like, this team has been played like 2 preseason games together. Yeah. So they've been playing for 2 years and they won championships. Now, there's still a ways to go, but man, this is a great start.
Yeah, the communication defensively, especially when you're dealing with a guy like Steph Curry. Like, you typically, we talk about Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan need to talk a lot. You saw the guards and the wings in this game talking a lot and switching a lot of that off-ball stuff. And like you said, I felt like they were being aggressive. Our guy Matt Brooks brought that up on Twitter, where instead of kind of being passive defensively and giving the defense or the offense things, they were kind of dictating that end of the floor, which is something that we really didn't see much of under Kenny Atkinson. And like, I'm not trying to take a shot at him. I don't think he would have deployed the same defense that we saw from Steve Nash tonight in terms of like, hey, we know Steph is the best player on that team. We are not letting Steph Curry beat us tonight. And they pretty much made his life miserable from the start. And I almost feel bad for Steph, given just this is kind of something he's going to deal with a lot this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe he's not going to have, like, you know, 5'6", 5' and plus guys having to swarm him, you know, above the top of the perimeter, because the Nets have size. Yeah. That entire starting five, the depth on their roster, it's basically, you know, Kyrie Irving at like 6'2", and, you know, KD gives him shit for being like 5'11" or whatever. But
it doesn't stop him from finishing over 2 bigs, which we saw tonight.
Dude, like, my favorite Kyrie shot, just to sort of say it, you know, I think we're not going to have any sensitive structure to this podcast.
It's a little
too
excited.
We're free ball in this one, no doubt at all. But my favorite shot from Kyrie Irving tonight, I'm not sure what yours was, Nick, was the pull-up from the baseline over, like, James Wiseman or Kevon Looney. I'm like, oh, he's going to finish the layup here. No, he stops on it, and then he has a rainbow shot where the ball is spinning so much. I'm just like, how do you do that? Like, I don't even know if KD can hit that shot.
I mean, and the guys are right there. He didn't have much room to get the shot off at all. That was probably my favorite one, or maybe the Barclays logo one, just because it was like straight up from Barclays. And like, part of me felt like he was trying to be like, oh, Steph can do that? Yeah, I can do that shit too. Like,
I put it out on Twitter. I'm like, this is better than the shot that he hit in against Chicago last season. Yeah. Now, against Chicago, he got a steal and it was nice. He was sort of pushing it a little bit. There was the energy for it. But as a pure, just objective basketball shot, that was deeper. That was like Damian Lillard, Stephen Curry style. And he's just like, oh, by the way, I'm still here, guys. I'm one of the best point guards in the league.
And it kind of just kind of was like the final nail in the half. We're like, okay, we're cooking this game. I think he finished with 24 in the first half. Obviously didn't play a ton in the second half, but just having that duo out there, it just puts so much pressure on the other team. And like, we saw in the first half, like, a lot of it was like, hey, you know, KD and Kyrie do their thing, and the defense almost kind of gave them opportunities to ISO, which, you know, is going to happen a lot because the Nets have so many other weapons. But then in the second half, you kind of saw them give KD and Kyrie a little bit more attention, and Spencer Dinwiddie started to attack the rim a little bit more. So, like, there's always going to be room for guys to attack somewhere. They're just going to have to take advantage of the opportunity when it's presented.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Spencer struggled a little bit early in terms of finding his own rhythm, looking for DJ way too much. We know it's going to take at least like 45 games for them to get to KD. the lob pick and roll with those two going. We did take a couple of games last season, and we were frustrated on the buzz with that. But I thought that his aggression and just decision-making and conviction from the third quarter and during that third quarter was like, I'm taking this shot. I'm driving it. I'm getting to the line. And you could tell it's just like, yeah, this is what we want Spencer to be. If he can be that for three, four quarters, maybe hopefully only three quarters for the majority of the season.
Yeah.
But in saying that, I thought that third quarter he looked really good. And I think as well, you know, he's still a decent enough defender. You know, he's athletic enough. He's incredibly smart. I've mentioned that a million times. And look, the stat line of 9 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists doesn't look too flashy on paper, but he did get to the line 4 times as well. I just thought that
plus 24 looks nice.
I mean, the plus 24, there wasn't like your plus 21 for Joe Harris, plus 21. The entire starting five was absolutely ridiculous. But in saying that, I thought there is still some growing pains and some acclimation for Spencer Dinwiddie, but man, we're nitpicking now.
Yeah, well, like we said on the last show, he has the biggest adjustment in what he's doing on the floor in comparison to what he's done in the past. And I felt like exactly what you said, Jack. In that third quarter, he was aggressive and he was Spencer Dinwiddie. In the first half, he was trying to be someone else. You know what I mean? He wasn't really playing his game. And it's going to be tough. I know our guy Bishop, who always interacts with us on Twitter, mentioned that he saw KD talking to Spencer Dinwiddie. So maybe there was something going on there. Like, hey, Spence, like, attack the rim. Do your thing. You miss a couple shots, no big deal. And the same thing with the three-point shot. Just take the threes if you miss, whatever. I thought, you know, in the second half he played better, and then the defense I thought wasn't like amazing, but it was good enough. And I really liked his defense, and I like Joe Harris's defense. I thought Joe really had a nice defensive game, and his toughness and strength was on display a couple times when he was holding his own against James Wiseman in the post trying to establish position on him.
Yeah, I just thought that there was, we talked about like defensive communication, defensive leadership last season. It was like Garrett Temple sort of leading the way there, but it seems to be a real collective unit now. And so, you know, DJ obviously heading at the helm and Jared Allen, but then KD, and you can imagine that if you had Barclays tonight, you would have heard lots of talk, lots of chatter, you know, rotate, switch, all those sort of things. I just thought that, you know, it was not necessarily a masterclass because, you know, the Golden State Warriors in their current iteration, you know, without Draymond and Stephen Curry obviously being the fulcrum, you know, Kelly Oubre had some nice moments and Andrew Wiggins maybe not so many nice moments.
All of Kelly Oubre's moments were off dunks. He was 3 of 14.
Yeah, it was. And look, he's an incredible athlete. But yeah, in saying that, the Nets have great athletes as well, and just they match that athleticism with IQ and just quality basketball. Like, because, you know, you look at Wiggins and Oubre, and those guys are just good athletes who can have some good basketball plays here and there, but our guys just were playing real fundamental basketball.
Yep.
And I think a lot of that goes to the coaching staff, a lot of that goes to, you know, our two superstar leaders as well. I just thought that the defense, it's going to be interesting because, like, one thing I love about the best defenses in the league, you know, Toronto and those sort of teams, is the fact that they're willing to, and Miami, they're willing to change on the fly. It's like, all right, this is what we did against Stephen Curry. This is what we're going to do against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Kemba Walker. Obviously, not going to be playing on Christmas Day, but you know what I sort of mean. So yep. I'm interested to see game by game if it's going to change. What are the principles going to be? Is it still going to be a lot of switching? Is there going to be a lot of swarming of Jason Tatum? Because, you know, make Jaylen Brown make plays. It's going to be interesting watching that going forward. And it's going to be fun to recap and just sort of nitpick at it. Because, look, there were times where Jeff Green was at the five tonight. And, you know, Jeff Green with Jared Allen. The rotations, I thought, were consistent and measured. And it just seemed to me that there was just cohesion that I didn't expect in game one.
Yeah, especially defensively, like the communication and stuff like that, it gives you more confidence and hope for the team being a good defense throughout the season because the cohesion is there. There's one play in my head where I just see like there's two Nets on each side of the floor and they're just communicating, pointing like we're switching off this off-ball stuff. And it's just like I can't recall a time last year where I saw like four guys communicating defensively at the same time last season. It's just like they kind of almost are buying into what championship basketball needs to be early on, and like, hey, we know we need to get the reps in at playing at the highest level, and we're not going to waste this opportunity because we saw what happened last year with the Clippers. And like your point with the rotation, you know, kind of pretty similar to what we saw in the preseason. It'll be intriguing if how much he messes with that throughout the year. And he's kind of referenced, you know, Steve Nash, he's kind of referenced that he anticipates it changing at different points because of injuries or whatever it might be.
The 10-man rotation, we obviously have that starting five that we all expected. Jeff Green, Toyin Prince, Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, and Landry Shamet. The five coming off the bench, and then in garbage time, he basically emptied the bench at that sort of point. So, but Nick, one thing I wanted to mention, obviously, Caris LeVert is the best bench player in the league. It is without question. How good was his defense tonight?
Yeah, active hands. I think this is kind of something we've been looking for. And I thought, like, obviously we kind of mentioned the defense of the team just being more aggressive was on display full hand. But this is the type of stuff we need from Karras. We need him to be a disruptor. And if you have so many disruptors on your defense.
Oh, that's Kyrie Irving, Nick. Oh, Kyrie Irving.
I get what you're doing there. But KD does it a lot, too. And, like, I think it's easy to forget because Karras hasn't been a good defender the last couple seasons. That wingspan, that length, that quickness, just some of those quick twitch plays that we see. And it's like, hey, that's an easy dunk for Karras, easy dunk for Jared Allen, whoever it is, getting that transition offense was huge. And I think that's something that the Nets have really lacked the last couple seasons.
Yeah, transition offense was absolutely masterful tonight. I honestly imagine, you know, that happening. 28 points in the fast break happening last season. Don't know how many times that would have happened.
And it can happen unless you create turnovers. Like, that's a really where a lot of the transition buckets come from. And I feel like also you brought this up in the preseason that you see a lot of outlet passes. Like, Jared Allen threw a pass all the way past half court tonight off the rebound. And that's something we didn't really see in the past. That's Mike D'Antoni right there and Steve Nash putting their fingerprints on this offense. And I love it. When you have this type of firepower, why not?
Yeah, it's literally you. I said this and I'll say it again. You can imagine them behind the scenes saying, the ball moves faster than the man. Move it. Get the rock moving. And, you know, I think that that's something, you know, if you look at the tonight at the sort of stat line, you know, the assists across the board, KD had 3, DJ had 1, Kai had 4, Spencer had 4, Joe Harris had 2, and there was, 5 for Karras LeVert, 2 for Jared Allen, 1 for Jeff Green, 1 for Reggie Perry, you know, 24 assists, but it was just this synergy where it's just like, I don't necessarily, it was just team basketball, despite the fact that we had Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving just doing some individual ridiculous plays that no other player in the NBA can do. It's, I don't know how to sort of explain how there can be beautiful basketball in both senses of the word. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and I felt like even on some of the plays where there weren't assists, they were playing off of each other in terms of like setting a screen or reacting to the open space, or it was some of those hockey assists that we talk about a lot on this show. So like you said, Jack, I think they're just, it was a nice balance. And like, you didn't really see them break up the offense. Like, Kyrie did a lot of his things within the offense. Even KD, occasionally he'll take the ISO. But if you're going to give KD an ISO against any defender on Golden State, almost any defender in the league, there's a couple guys where maybe they can hold their own, but any defender tonight on Golden State, and you're going to clear the other four guys to the other side of the court, that's a matchup that KD has to take every time, especially if it's the likes of Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, and there was a couple of times where he got the post-up position. I'm sure Kyrie Irving was jealous of that, but he did get the kick out and he got the three anyway. So I just thought that they're, look, it's game one, and it's hard not to overreact. We said that after the last preseason. But then now the game's mattering, and they're continuing to do that. You know, the challenges are going to only increase against the Boston Celtics, and, you know, they're going to be a much more formidable opponent, despite the fact that Stephen Curry is a really, really good player. They've got depth. They've got great coaching there. So that's a matchup that the Nets are going to want to solidify themselves against. But
2020 has reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be more efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there's no long-term contracts. And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidate instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only site that moves as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win the season, from game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts.
Look, there was just so many good things, Nick. If we were to talk about, you know, the center rotation tonight, DeAndre Jordan had 17 minutes. Jared Allen had 20 minutes. You happy with that?
Yeah, I am happy. But I will say some of that's also skewed because of Jared Allen playing more garbage time. You know what I mean? Because that second unit carried a little bit into the fourth quarter when they probably didn't need to. So, I mean, I thought Jared Allen's impact in terms of comparison to DeAndre Jordan was on full display. Like, he's just a more impactful player. Even the deflection he had on one of the passes, like at the top of the key, DeAndre just doesn't do that type of stuff. And it just helps create some of those transition buckets in which we talked about. That play where he stopped ball on Eric Pascal and then he tried to drive to him on the rim and he blocked it. I was just like, that's an elite defensive play. There's not a ton of guys in the league that can do that.
Yeah, and then when Kelly Oubre tried to get like his millionth dunk of the night and he missed the poster, and Katie's, and then Jared Allen's talking shit, I'm like, hey, yeah, you talk your shit, Jared, you talk your shit. But there were still, you know, obviously probably similar issues that I think plague Jared Allen in terms of just his aggression and composure down low when he does get the ball. But he makes up for it with all the things that you mentioned, Nick. And I think his offensive rebounding as well. He's continuing to go for those boards. Three tonight with to go with the four boards that he got on the defensive side of the ball. So I think that he's continuing to maintain aggression. If he just fixes up a few little things, again, only 22 years old, younger than Jason Tatum maybe. I don't even know that. We'll wait to that game. But I just thought in terms of as well, my favorite play of his tonight on the offensive end was on the short roll, that kick out to Joe Harris for the three. I put out a not-so-savory meme in response to it, but man, that was such a good play.
Yeah, he's just becoming a smarter basketball player. We like to see more aggression in the paint where, like, he should probably be a little bit more dominant. But I also feel like, you know, a lot of the Warriors players weren't doing anything but running to the paint and trying to rebound. So it was like kind of where they're spending a lot of their energy. And they do have some big bodies down there that aren't necessarily good at other things. That's why they struggle in a lot of different aspects. But if he can just dunk a couple more times, I think that's going to be more impactful. You know what I mean? Like, he should just have the mindset of like Amari, just say, hey, I'm going to hammer everything in the paint, because if I don't get the bucket, I'm going to get the call at the free throw line in five free throws tonight.
About to say that, you know, hit four of them as well. I'm not going to read into it too much, but it seemed to me that he looked confident and his form was a little more fluid, or is that just me?
It helps when KD, you know, smacks you on the ass before you shoot a free throw.
Yeah, I know. Man, I got the best superstar in the league giving me a hype up here.
Yeah, I honestly feel like it's easy to forget, Jack, also because obviously we're a little bit older than some of the younger guys in this team, that like you are starstruck and like having such a mentor in your life or such like a figure that you idolize. Like, Jared Allen grew up probably watching Kevin Durant. He played at Texas. Like, they showed him his highlight tape when he got recruited. You know what I mean? So like, there is definitely some feelings there in terms of like, this is my guy. And like that is going to help him. And I think it's going to help Caris LeVert, because we saw Caris LeVert getting some help from Kyrie Irving on the bench.
Oh man, his game tonight, I think the threes were probably the thing that impressed me most, because he just had aggression and he got, look, 3 or 5 from three and 5 or 6 from the free throw line, 20 points. You know, 6 or 17 from the field doesn't look too great. But to me, I'm just like, damn, he looked more efficient than that. You know, he was still plus 18 and still had 5 assists and had 9 rebounds as well, you know, on the verge of a triple-double there. I just thought he might have been one of the best. No, he wasn't. But it was just
he might
so
have been
damn
the third best player on the court.
Oh, quite easily. Yeah, quite easily. Look, you know, Stephen Curry wasn't as efficient as he was, but, you know, Caris was just like, you know what, I got second units, and he is just so damn confident to drive on him. And when he's out there with Kyrie and KD, the fluidity in that shot right now off the catch, it looks pretty damn good to me. And he hit one off the dribble as well, which we know he's incredibly comfortable with. I just thought, you know, Caris LeVert, now he's the next third star, Nick.
Yeah, and I thought the three-point shot, even on the misses, looked clean. Like, they weren't bad misses. It was ones that kind of rim out, which happens to everybody. Like you said, it didn't feel like 6 of 17. It felt more like 6 of 14. Like, it didn't feel super efficient, but it felt like most of the misses weren't that bad. I feel like maybe there's a couple times he could have got maybe a couple free throw calls, but or he got his own offensive rebound, or Jared Allen did, and they ended up getting a bucket for the Nets and just kind of disrupting the Warriors' defense and what they're trying to do, collapsing everything in the paint and setting others up, and be it he gets the assist or someone else got the assist. Did you feel like at certain times he could use another ball handler, or Landry Shamet can fill up that role eventually?
There were times where Landry Shamet looked at him like, oh, okay, there's this sort of like three-man game with him and Jared Allen as well. I'm like, okay, that's nice. And you kick one out to Shamet, or Shamet has decent enough ball handling skills to be able to make the pass and make the read. I saw your tweet and sort of saying that, you know, whether Dinwiddie and LeVert paired with each other in certain times can impact each other positively. Yeah, I think that they certainly can. But I also think that there's just a lot of capable basketballers in this team. You know, I remember Bob Myers in seasons past saying it, like, you know, whatever conferences he sort of said, it's just like, yeah, you've got, like, you know, these three-point specialists and these athletes or whatever, but what that sort of, those, and like I said, it's on, I think, an outlet pod, your weaknesses get found out against the best teams and in the postseason. And if you can't do more than one thing, then you are going to get exploited for not being able to do that one thing. Whereas the Nets have a lot of guys that can do a lot of things, and it helps having Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving as well.
Yeah, it cleans up a lot of stuff. And honestly, I sent that tweet in the first half, and the second half, in the third quarter, I saw Landry Shamet a little bit more of the ball in his hands, and I wonder if that was adjustment from Steve Nash telling Karis to get others involved more, or just like other guys stepping up. And I feel like maybe that could be the case, and he can kind of grow in that role. Talking to Robert Flom of the Clippers coverage, he mentioned Landry Shamet's ball handling and how the Clippers probably tried to overuse it at certain points, but if the Nets use him more as a secondary ball handler, I think it could be, you know, impactful at certain points during the year. But obviously, when you get into the playoffs, you don't really necessarily have to worry about that, because all the minutes are going to be super staggered and Kyrie and KD are going to be playing 40 plus. So
very true. Very true. What did you think of Landry Shamet's game and some of the other bench guys?
You know what that sticks out to me about Landry Shamet? I don't even really pay attention to the box score all the time for him. I think he's a really smart basketball player. Like, I just think he makes a lot of good reads out there. Like, there was a play in transition where he dished the ball up to Caris LeVert, and then he relocated behind the three-point line, like, almost instantly, ended up hitting the three. I think his shot's going to be kind of fluctuate, you know, with a lot of young three-point shooters. You know, it's hard to be consistent, but he does have a super quick trigger. Like, it doesn't take much for him to get the ball off. It might be faster than Joe Harris.
It's certainly faster than Joe Harris. Joe Harris seems to get a bit more, like, just, he's not Duncan Robinson, you know, but he's certainly incredibly quick. Accurate. You know, since 2017-18, he's the most accurate three-point shooter in the league, even more accurate than, you know, the best shooter in the history of the game, Stephen Curry. So, look, I think that even if he's not having good shooting nights, it's just like, you still have the confidence that he has that gravity. Unlike an Allen Crabbe, like, if he goes 1-4, it's just like, oh, did he really? I thought he went, like, you know, 2-5. And that's what it sort of felt like to me, because, you know, I didn't look at the box score during the game. I normally look at it when we're sort of chatting and sort of going, ah, really? And it was like, you know, the 6 or 17 with Caris LeVert. But yeah, I just think that the bench unit right now, it could rival a lot of starting units in the NBA. Even if Marv Albert thinks Caris LeVert's only starting on 70% of NBA teams, man. Marv Albert and Chris Webber, really? We got that for the opening game? God damn it.
It was pretty rough for both guys. Marv Albert's getting up there in age. It's tough for him to recognize which player is which. You know, how many times he called Marquise Chris Andrew Wiggins? I'm not really sure, but...
And what did he call that? Timothy? How did he say Timothy Luau Cabaret? Timothy Luau or something?
I think at first he just wanted to say Timothy. So, like, he didn't want to say the last name. And then I feel like someone's like, bro, you got to say his last name. Like, but again, on Shamet, I also like the take that he had in the second half where he went hard to the rim and got the free throws. He didn't finish the layup, but that's just like, okay, not hit my three-point shot, let me do my thing. And Jeff Green, again, like, he's looking like a major steal, just what he can provide. We saw, like you mentioned earlier, we saw the small ball lineup to finish the first half, and hitting the three, got his mandatory dunk of the game. Like, we're good.
He's going to be a key contributor going forward. And, you know, he, like I said, many a time, he just unlocks so many different things. He provides the athleticism. You know, if Torian Prince isn't on, then Jeff Green's got that athleticism and that vet IQ. You know, it's always good to have that veteran presence, but the veteran presence that can contribute on the court. Yeah. You know, Jared Dudley did that in spurts, but I think Jeff Green is going to be doing it quite consistently.
Yeah, definitely, especially because the second unit is relatively young. It's really young, actually. Just Jared Allen, Landry Shamet, Torian Prince, Caris LeVert. You know, LeVert and Prince are kind of more so vets, I guess, to this point. But Jared Allen, Landry Shamet, both guys, what? Shamet's third year in the league. Jared Allen's fourth, I believe. So, like, you know, it's good to have that presence out there. And he understands, too, at certain points. Like, I remember he got the ball at 7 seconds to shot clock. You'd see a young guy with Rodions try to pass to somebody else. Like, Jeff Green knows, like, hey, I have to take the shot here. I have to make a play, or it's just going to end up being a shot clock violation. So some of those heady things from a vet is always good.
Yeah, if you're talking about, you know, yesteryear and years past about, you know, that four position, those wing positions, where the Nets have just had such a gap and just, like, guys who just can play consistent basketball. Now, we can't expect that from Rudy on this course. Obviously, you know, his rookie season was a big flash in the pan. But, you know, Jeff Green is just going to be steady, steady, steady. And, you know, I just think that the rotation, because if you have the superstardom of Kevin Durant, you don't have to do all these little things.
Yeah.
You're not forced to do the extra things like, you know, we had... like we needed Torian Prince to do in seasons past. Like we needed Rodion Skouras to do in season past. We have Kevin freaking Durant, Nick.
Yeah, and it feels like, too, is like you don't necessarily have to worry about winning every single small aspect of the game like you're talking about, Jack. Like you're just focusing on more of the bigger things because you have the talent to match up with anyone. And it's like you have this great starting lineup that's one of the best in the NBA. But then, like you mentioned, you have arguably the best bench unit in the NBA. So if you go into that second quarter already having a lead, the bench unit might end up boosting it a little bit more for you. Just that's the type of situation Nets are going to be in a lot. And like I joked about it a lot over the offseason as like this team could be in a lot of blowouts, but I feel better about that joke now just because like you mentioned with the cohesion, just so many offensive weapons, it's going to be a tough team to stop. And not to say Golden State is a bad team, but they're definitely not one of the best teams in the league and they still have a lot of work to do. And they're almost a good matchup for the Nets because it's just so Steph centric.
Yeah, look, I never have confidence with Brooklyn Nets games. I'm always a little less optimistic, but man, KD and Kyrie might be changing that soon. Nick, I talked about this on a previous pod. I can't remember if it was the last one, the one before that, about our rebounding. Now, the Nets won the rebounding battle 57-47 tonight. Now, obviously, that you can point that down to, like, you know, the Warriors missing a lot of shots. But I think that rebounding, the Nets are just doing well.
Yeah, I think that the guards are getting more involved this year. That's
Joe Harris. Like you look at Joe Harris's numbers. Joe Harris had 7 boards, 2 offensive boards for Joe Harris. When's the last time Joe Harris had more than 1 offensive board or any offensive boards?
Yeah, I mean, even you look at Caris LeVert, like you mentioned earlier, 9 rebounds. You have 5 from KD. You know, DeAndre had 11. Jared Allen had 7. You have 5 from Spencer Dinwiddie. I felt Spencer in the board area a little bit too. And Joe has a knack for like getting defensive boards and like ripping them from people. So I love that too. Like, I swear, like I felt like you tonight, his toughness and strength. I was just watching Joe Harris and I was just like, man, I just absolutely love this guy as a role player. He's just like the perfect player to have on a team like this. And he doesn't care about doing the dirty work. And I'm not showing a shot at JJ Redick or Kyle Korver, but he does things that they wouldn't do. And it's not because like they're soft or anything like that. Joe's just like more of a physical player. Like he's just more, his body is built to deal with some of the bigger bodies in the NBA where Kyle Korver, JJ Redick didn't necessarily have that much weight on them.
Yeah, and I think both of those guys are better pure shooters and they are the elite of the elite. And Joe's probably at that point of his career now where if he maintains the consistency, he can get into that realm. But those guys have been doing it for like, you know, 9 a decade. But like you mentioned, Nick, Joe Harris, in terms of the physicality that he provides and the desire to be physical, he wants that contact. He's got the tattoos now. You drive into that elbow, get the elbow up in the air, Joey Buckets. And look, I think that we just talk about his game tonight. 10 points, 7 boards, 2 assists. Did have a block as well. 2 of 5 from 3, 4 of 8 from the field. I think that the attention he's going to get from national media throughout the year, it's going to be like, we're going to get sick of hearing them say, oh, Joe Harris is more than a shooter. Oh, I didn't know Joe Harris could keep.
We've been saying it for 2 years.
We've been saying it for goddamn 2 years. And there was a really good story on The Athletic that I read the other day, a deep dive on Joe Harris since his high school days, and talking about him not only as a basketballer, but just as a guy. And like he was talking about it, like high school and college, he's like, you know, some of my teammates are down, coach, is there something we can do for that? I'm just like, oh my god, how can I fall more in love with you? Great piece, so go check it out in The Athletic. But yeah, Joe Harris is going to be big for the Nets this season. And like KD said, he better be shooting it, because or else KD's going to give him some shit about it.
Yeah, and I think it's great that he's forcing him, like we talked about yesterday on the previous show, like forcing him to take some of these tougher shots. Because that's the type of shots that you're going to have to take in the postseason. And like we've heard a lot this summer, like you said, oh, Joe Harris is just a shooter. His defense is so bad. But I think one thing Joe Harris does, like he's not an elite on-ball defender. He doesn't have that skill set. But he understands his role in the defense and does a very good job playing to his help. Like he understands who's behind him and where he can kind of funnel somebody to so he can be in a good position or just make their shot that much harder.
I think that's what the Nets did incredibly well tonight, yeah. Nick.
I think it's by design. We saw this a little bit with Kenny Atkinson, obviously, with the drop coverage. But I think we've heard, I want to say it was comment from Caris LeVert saying, hey, we have three elite rim protectors on this team, Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan, and Kevin Durant. We know they have our back, so we can be a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah, Kevin Durant has had a block in every single game that he's played as a Brooklyn Net. Like, that's wild to say. It's incredible to say, because, you know, it was the thing that we were worried about most. And, you know, we got Nolan Jensen dropping takes from Nets Republic about the fact he's going to be on all defense. I'd love it. You know, he played pretty damn good on that end of the floor tonight. But, yeah, I just think that the team cohesion on both ends of the floor, too. Obviously, it's a one-game sample size, Nick, yep. But... Does tonight's performance and, you know, the whatever you want to take from the preseason give you more confidence going forward about the Brooklyn Nets question marks on the defensive end?
Yeah, I would say so. I think just the fact that Kevin Durant is looking so healthy, and I feel like guys are testing him. Like, you saw Andrew Wiggins go at him a couple times. You saw Wiseman go at him a couple times, and he was like, I'm blocking that stuff. Get that out of here. Like, I'm Kevin Durant still. Like, I still have 6'11 with a crazy wingspan. So, yeah, for sure, it gives me more confidence. I was already pretty high on this team and going to the finals and winning it, but every time I see something on the court just makes sense, and even just, like, the defense from the other guys. Like, we talked about Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert. All those guys are question marks coming into the season. Can they play good enough defense to help this team? And the answer tonight was yes. You know, and even, you know, Taurean Prince, Jeff Green too. Like, these guys played up to the level. The only one who really, like, I wasn't super happy with this game was probably DeAndre Jordan. Obviously, I have a little bit of bias there, but I'm going to hate the game if you start it with a turnover. And then there was a couple plays where, like, he still did not get out on three-point shooters. And it's just, like, those type of lazy plays you can't have. And I get it. Sometimes making the rotation late, it doesn't really do anything. But sometimes you just have to do it to show that you care.
Yeah, and there were also times where he hung out there too much. And it's just like, DJ, you can read that. You know, you have built a reputation of being at least, you know, a decent defensive player across your career. And, you know, some of that might have been just pure athleticism. But, you know, you're smart enough to actually just rotate there. And, you know, it certainly is frustrating. But, again, nitpicking at the smaller things.
I felt like he was better in his second stint of minutes instead of his first. Like, I felt like the first one, like, he felt like he was playing in Tim's. Like, we saw different parts last year.
I agree with that as well. But one thing I wanted to ask, Nick, now, this the Nets are clicking on all cylinders tonight. How can they get better?
Turnovers. What do they have? 20 turnovers tonight, Jack, I think. I'll double-check. So, like, yep. I still think there was plenty of sloppy plays in terms of just turnovers, new teammates. That stuff's going to happen. Obviously, I think they're going to be a team that turns over the ball at a decent rate, just given how they want to play offensively. But still, I think you can clean up some of that. I think so, there were still some defensive communications and things along those lines, and they didn't stick out as much as because Kelly Oubre, Andrew Wiggins, Eric Pascal aren't guys that are going to hurt you to the highest extent. You know what I mean? Against Boston, I think some of the issues we saw tonight might stick out a little bit more, but overall, it's just kind of fine-tuning things and continuing to clean things up and just, you know, take out all the mistakes. Obviously, there's always going to be a couple mistakes, but the more you can clean up, the better it's going to be. And I feel like you have to feel better because the cohesion and the understanding of the scheme is only going to continue to improve. What about
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, I agree with that. I think the habits of winning basketball are being built now. The championship habits, as Katie alluded to them last year, you know, in the locker room with Kenny Atkinson and the team. And it seems to me that, you know, on both ends of the floor, you know, they are leading the way. You know, Kyrie Irving, I thought, showed great intensity on the defensive end of the ball. You know, he's not going to have that every single night.
He gets in his stance and he, like, really looks like he wants to defend.
Yeah, I think that there's a real engagement there from him. I think, you know, whether that's Kevin Durant holding him accountable, Steve Nash holding him accountable, whoever else. But there's also, like, times where, like, him or Caris will gamble. But they can gamble now because you got KD and Jared Allen and Jeff Green backing you up. So I think that's those mistakes sometimes aren't necessarily as pronounced when last season, you know, those gambles would lead to just easy open layups because there wasn't the communication and leadership on the defensive side of the floor. You know, I think offensive execution sometimes was a little bit sloppy. Sometimes the ball got a little bit stagnant. Yep. But I'm probably nitpicking a little bit there. You know, I alluded to, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie probably playing, you know, the level of basketball that we saw in that third quarter more consistently. You know, the turnovers, you know, I think some of them were from him. You know, he had three himself. You know, it seemed to be more of a sort of team sort of thing. And I think that a large majority of those 20 turnovers were positive turnovers, if that makes any sense. Yeah. They're trying to get the ball moving. They're trying to get in the open court. And I'll take those turnovers. I'll take an extra five of those if it means that, you know, we get 10 extra points on the other end of the floor. You know, and I think that the guys know that. I think Steve Nash will be preaching that and D'Antoni will be preaching that. It's fine-tuning, Nick. And again, This is game one of 72. And hopefully, you know, the guys pull up okay. KD pulls up all right. You know, Kyrie Irving looked like he was looking at his finger. I think he's pinky, which looked a little bit strapped at one point in time. Yeah. You know, I think that they were talking about that on the broadcast. Hopefully that's a non-issue because, you know, he's looked pretty damn good otherwise. So I think, yeah, just all those sort of little things that take you from being, you know, a really good regular season team to being a great team and a great postseason team.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, too, when they have a bad three-point shooting night. You know what I mean? Like, they shot 42 tonight, and if they shoot over 40 throughout the season, like, at different points, they're just going to be incredibly hard to stop because they have so many good three-point shooters. So I'm kind of intrigued how they deal with one of those weird shooting nights that happen to every NBA team. But like you said, one-game sample size, so we can really only address so much. And we kind of have no idea what Golden State's going to be like. There's a chance they could be a bad team. Like, I'm not ruling that as a possibility, especially given they're missing Draymond and missing Klay for the entire year.
Oh, they're a bad team without Draymond. Without Draymond, they're, you know, essentially last year's
honestly, team. You could probably argue they could end up being a bad team with Draymond. I'm not trying to take a ton for one game sample size, but not to get off topic, but we talked about this a lot in the outlet and on the power ranking stuff. I was a little concerned about how much Steph Curry could do if no one else on the offense is getting respect and no one else can create plays for him. And that was really the case tonight.
And that's why, you know, the Nets are in such a good spot because they have four or five guys that can do it for themselves. It's a plethora of riches. And, you know, I don't think that the Nets take that for granted in any respect of the word. So I guess in general, Nick, what do you want to see more of, less of? What do you think needs to change heading into the Boston Celtics game? You know, what are the keys there on Christmas Day?
You know what? I just want to see more of Nets basketball so I can make a better observation of what I'm seeing out there because it's such a small sample size. I think, you know, you're going to try to clean up the turnovers, but I don't think it's realistic to expect some of those turnovers to get cleaned up because, like you mentioned, some of them were positive. It's like overpassing or trying to set your teammates up for a big play or something like that. And it's hard to get upset about that. I think I'm intrigued to see how they match up with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, given they have two offensive options. They have a better defense too, so that should be good.
The defense is really good. That's one thing I'm intrigued to see. Now, we saw the preseason. I don't think you can take a lot from that matchup, but we have elite shot makers, but I think that the Boston Celtics are going to be even more engaged. You know, I was shouting to the guys on the Celtics Lab, you know, another podcast on the OTG network, and they were sort of talking about, you know, that they sort of discarded, you know, the regular season. It was more just sort of experimental. So, you know, throwing different guys out there, the rookie, see what would happen with Nesmith and Pritchard and those sort of dudes. I thought that was a really good point. And so I'm not reading into it, but, you know, I think they are a much better team. And they're one of the top four-ish teams in the Eastern Conference. And the Brooklyn Nets are going to have to go through them if they're going to want to play, you know, regular and decent regular season basketball and meaningful postseason basketball.
Yeah, and obviously no Kemba Walker in that game too. So only not as big a test as it could be, but still a good test to go against some of those guys. And like you said, a well-coached team. Brad Stevens obviously wasn't going to show his hand against the Nets. They didn't really have much to lose. I do think some of that, though, was bad play from Boston, and they do need to correct some things going into this game, or the Nets could end up cooking them too.
Yeah, look, I'm not as confident as a 26-point win as I was after sort of like, you know, the first or second quarter tonight. You know, if the Nets can have a 40-point first quarter again, then they're going to be scary. They are scary good offensively right now, Nick.
Yeah, especially when you're not careful with the basketball. Because that's when they get those easy baskets, they get those transition threes, and all of a sudden it's a two-point game turns into a 10-point game, and I kind of felt like that's what happened in the first quarter. Because Golden State started the game just going back and forth. Next thing you know, it was 18-8.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, KD isn't afraid of the contact. He's driving like a madman.
Yep.
Kyrie ain't afraid of the contact either. You know, all of our guys are confident drivers, so that's what makes the transition basketball even more deadly because, you know, if you're going to have to foul them, and they're pretty comfortable at the line.
Yeah, and one thing that KD was, he's a little out of rhythm with, and I've noticed this in preseason, I noticed this in tonight's game, going left and shooting with his right hand on that layup, it's like a little push shot type of thing. You know what I'm talking about? He missed that, I want to say, two or three times. That's one of his go-to moves. He's going to get that in his bag by the end of the season. And when he does, it's just going to be that much harder to stop. Like, I want to say he missed that three times tonight, and most nights he's going to hit it at least two or three.
You know what I'd love as well, Nick? Just a little bit of a nitpick because we spoke about it probably a lot last season. I want to see. Can you guess what I'm loving about tonight's performance?
I don't know, Jack. There's so many things to choose from. So
it relates to what we were just talking about before in terms of just the aggression and getting to a certain spot and actually executing when going to that certain spot.
I don't know, Jack. I'm
the free throws, baby. The free throws.
Oh, yeah.
The free throws. When you have Kevin Durant hitting 7 of 7, Spencer Dinwiddie hitting 4 of 4, it felt like he would have like 4 of 10 some night. Yeah. Kyrie hitting 2 of 2, Jared Allen hitting 4 of 5, Caris LeVert 5 of 6, Landry Shamet 3 of 4. Oh, 80% is going to be a good number. I'm happy with that number.
And I think it helps that you have two of the best free throw shooters in the league in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, because that almost sets the tone. You know what I mean? You saw last year, Spencer was the main guy at a lot of different points last year, and he had those free throw issues, and then it gets contagious. Jared Allen misses three. Joe Harris ends up missing one. Torian Prince can't hit any. Now you have KD, Kyrie setting the tone, hitting their free throws. I think it just helps the whole team. I think also just like the positive vibes and kind of always thinking you're going to win now. You know what I mean? I don't know if they think that right now, but by the end of the season, they're going to be in a place where they're probably going to think that on most nights, if not
They should, with the talent on the roster right now, they should be expecting to win and they should be upset. But, you know, I think that the one thing that I'm going to be looking for, and it'll probably come at least in certain points against the Boston Celtics, how did the Nets deal with adversity on the court? They haven't had that at all yet in the two preseason matchups, and tonight, that's when the real test is going to occur, and that's when, you know, we'll see the real Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, I'm intrigued that we'll even see it against Boston, just given some of the injuries. It's like we might have to wait a few weeks until we see them pushed, because if Boston
does... Maybe I'm a bit higher on the Celtics, but I just think that, you know, a guy like Jason Tatum hitting a heap of shots, you know, Jaylen Brown being pesky, Marcus Smart, you know, forcing Kevin Durant into some bad shots, I think they're going to be good, and
I was going to say, I think they can be good, but I also could see a scenario where they're just... you know, not there yet. Like, I think they're a good team, and I think they're going to be a great team this year. But I think it's easy to assume that, you know, some teams are going to come into the gate a little slow because the season did just start. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's totally fair. And, you know, you would expect the Brooklyn Nets to be one of those teams with so many new pieces and different things to acclimate.
New head coach.
new head coach, all those different things. But, yeah, we could do some
questions, though, right, Jack?
We do have some questions. And first one I wanted to hit up was our guy, Pete Toll. He said, what was something that didn't show up in the box score that you loved the most out of tonight?
I think we already kind of discussed it, the cohesion. You know, the communication between the team on defense, offense, and then just some of the smart basketball plays and making the reads and playing off of each other. It's just something I didn't necessarily anticipate in game one.
Yeah, I think that just the intangible chemistry was something that I saw on both ends of the floor. And, you know, especially defensively, that's something that, you know, normally takes some time to sort of iron out the kinks. It was something that took some time to iron out the kinks in the early points of last season. Then the Nets established their system and they go bang, bang, bang. Whereas I think the Nets have a much more free-flowing system on both ends of the floors. You know, we heard Kyrie sort of say that, you know, we haven't been executing a lot of plays yet. A lot of it's just sort of read and react. You know, I think that defensively there is a lot of that as well, because we have a lot of guys who are just smart and good communicators, and that leads to good things on both ends of the floor. So I think just those intangibles were something that I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, I agree, Jack, 100%. And I think that's kind of the stuff that we always are looking for. You can look at the box score and find stuff, but it's that other thing. That's going to be the difference in types of being a championship team. We know the talent is there. It's about those other intangibles.
Yeah, it's about establishing the identity of the Brooklyn Nets. Like, when you think of the best teams in the league, you automatically, you know, associate them with something. You know, the Lakers in their insane defense and LeBron James running the floor with Anthony Davis as the second best superstar. The Brooklyn Nets are starting to do those things now, but we're in game one and it's going to be a long damn grind. We had Manolo jump in as well, Nick. One thing I'd like to ask, if the Nets make the finals or win it all, do they re-sign Spencer and Allen if they aren't traded by then? Now, obviously, we talked about on the pod with Nolan about not signing Jared Allen. Do you want to explain the sort of poison pill thing, Nick, for those who aren't necessarily totally aware of it?
Yeah, so pretty much what it is, if they were to extend Jared Allen, the trade in which they make the contract they're trading Jared Allen essentially as if he has next year's contract.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So I don't know what he's making this year. I want to say it's like $5 million. And let's assume we made $14 million. Now the other team has to be able to take that $14 million. But the Nets aren't sending out $14 million. They're sending out five. Yeah. Yep. So it gets extremely complicated. And then you can only work with a couple teams in the league, or you have to find that third team. And like we talked about, from the Jared Allen perspective, it never really made sense. And to answer Menlo's question, I definitely think if they win a championship, they'll probably re-sign both guys. Like, I think Josiah is not going to waste his – he's going to put out the money if they win.
look, you saw what's happening with the Golden State Warriors right now. They're paying all their guys, and they're deep, deep, deep into the luxury tax. Yep. Draymond Green's on like a $100 million deal. Klay got a max. Steph got a max. You know, I think that if you are playing winning basketball, and, you know, obviously there are economic sort of factors that sort of go into account, and I've spoken about in the past that Josiah's wealth has increased over this year due to a number of different circumstances, and I have him in my head, and by my estimation, is one of the top five richest owners in the league. And I think he's going to continue to grow with that. You can read into that whatever you will and how that affects the team going forward. We've already seen that he's been willing to pay. You know, that Joe Harris contract is a pretty hefty deal. And, you know, yep. to retain him, you know, $475 isn't chump change. But when it comes to Spence, I'm questionable, because I think Spencer, you know, if we're continuing to have these questions about Spencer's role, Spencer knows, like, you know what, I can be like, you know, a secondary ball handler where I'm more comfortable having the ball in my hands, whether it's in like, you know, a Dallas or another sort of team sort of in that sort of respect. Whereas, you know, there his skill set, you know, Caris LeVert, if he's continued to play as well as he does and Spencer doesn't, then does that sort of, you know, yeah. create a sense of envy for Spencer Dinwiddie? Look, I don't know, but
I think it's also just not even envy too, Jack. I think it's career fulfillment.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, you want to be the best that you possibly could be. So, like I said, I think the Nets will do everything they can, but I could see Spencer, like, he's a guy that led this team to the playoffs, you know, at different points during the last 2 years. So, like, he could want to see how good he can be.
Absolutely, absolutely. Final one, Nick. Charles Barkley brought up the conversation again at halftime. Would you trade LeVert, Allen, and Dinwiddie for Harden, or would you prefer the depth? I say no deal. What say you guys? This is from at King M. King Miggle.
Yeah.
you got it, my dude.
I feel like, you know, we've already kind of wanted to see this team. So I don't think it's really changed my mind. I want to see the Nets play. I want to see with this depth what they can be. Obviously, the James Harden stuff's still going to be out there. I mean, I feel like you're feeling less interest in the offer day by day. Like we talked about after preseason, the team looks so good that it's like, do you really want to screw this up? And how much better does James Harden make them? Like, obviously, the ceiling is going to be substantially higher, but like I've mentioned before, I think the floor is going to be lower. And with this team that they have now, it almost feels a little bit safer.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the ball is now swung. The pendulum has swung where it's just like, you know what? The Brooklyn Nets were trying to clamor for him. You know, Kevin Durant wanted to trade for him. You see the way that the Brooklyn Nets played tonight? You keep James Harden. You keep that strip club attending, pandemic defying superstar, you know, in your sort of area of the woods. I'd much rather have, you know, the depth that the Brooklyn Nets have right now. And look, it might not last, and, you know, but I think that's right. I said this in the Celtics lab as well, because there were Boston Celtics rumors surrounding James Harden too. Around the Houston Rockets, the opposing teams are the ones with the leverage at this point in time. Maybe not the Sixers, but every other team is certainly in that regard.
Yeah, and it doesn't work out, trade for James Harden in the offseason. If someone else makes a move for him, they probably overpaid. So you're feeling okay with it. It's kind of similar to how I felt about the Jrue Holiday stuff. Like, Jrue Holiday would have been a great fit on this team, but trading essentially five first-round picks for Jrue Holiday doesn't really make sense. Like, it kind of made sense for the Bucks, but still, it's still not necessarily one of the best moves. And actually, our boy Corey Waldron hit us with a question. What were your thoughts on Kyrie Irving's defense? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, we alluded to it a little bit earlier. There are times where Kyrie just looks so damn engaged. He's moving his feet. He's got his stance low. You know, he opened up some possessions on Stephen Curry. You know, but there are also times where if you put him in the pick and roll, he is going to die. Like, he is going to just collapse.
He's not a big guy.
He's not. And look, he's not, you know, Kemba Walker or Isaiah Thomas in that sort of respect either. He's still, like, you know, 6'2"-ish, you know, probably a little bit shorter than you and I, Nick. But in saying that, I think he wants to lead there. He realizes, you know, he is a leader of this team, and it starts on both ends of the floor. You know, you want to get those insane logo shots. You want to get those insane baseline shots. You better set the tone on both ends of the floor. And, you know, he's not going to be like this, you know, for 72 games. I alluded to that earlier. But if he continues to show it enough, and, you know, his teammates, Kevin Durant and the coaches, hold him accountable for doing, you know, poor things and showing poor behaviors on that end of the floor, then I'm going to be more than happy, mate.
Yeah, I think his defense will be better on nights where he goes against Steph Curry, Dame Lillard, you know, Russell Westbrook, or whoever it might be. The other elite guards in the league, like, he's going to make sure he plays some defense. He doesn't want to end up on a highlight on the other end.
Yep, not totally, totally fair, but look, it is a fun buzz, Nick. I don't know if we're going to remember this, like, one for a long time. Like, there are There's a few Brooklyn buzzers that we do, and you know, the one that sort of sticks out is the Kevin Durant one.
Yeah,
that's our first ever podcast. But you know, going into what is it, our fourth season of this thing? You know, I'm in my fifth season of JBT. You and Corey have been smashing the outlet. The OTG network is growing. It feels like Thanksgiving. I'm feeling like great to be a Brooklyn Nets fan and grateful to be on the Brooklyn Buzz, being able to co-host with you. I want to savor this right now because who knows what's going to happen in 10 games time, but I'm going to stick to the mentality of the roster and just go one game at a time. I'm going to savor this win until the Boston Celtics game.
I think Kevin Durant said the same thing after the game, so you guys are in sync already, Jack. But I agree. I'm grateful to have the opportunity to co-host this with you, Jack, and just talk about the Nets on a regular basis. And obviously, we enjoy talking about the team for the last couple of years, but we're going to enjoy it even more this season because they're one of the most talented teams in the league, and they have two of the best players in the league, and one possibly being the best in Kevin Durant. And it's cool too is because we have the best of both worlds, where we got this new these new superstars, and then we also still have some of our old favorites in Caris LeVert and Joe Harris and Jared Allen and Spencer Dinwiddie. So it's like almost the perfect fan experience for this team.
Yeah, I think in that sort of respect, you know, not to go too overboard, you sort of see like people saying, oh, they bought their championship, blah, 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 blah. Where it's just like you mentioned, there's the amalgamation of both. You know, Sean Marks brought up Caris LeVert, and we have that emotional attachment to him and Jared Allen and Spencer Dinwiddie. And clearly for me, Joe Harris, wearing my Joe Harris t-shirt right now. Yeah, this is going to be a fun season, Nick. And it's game one, and goddamn, I'm buzzing again. And it's a nice feeling. It is a nice feeling.
Yeah, I'm super excited, Jack. Always fun talking Nets with you. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. And obviously, make sure you're checking out The Buzz after every game on all streaming platforms, including otgbasketball.com, netsrepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings. A four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure four-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each four-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour four-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.